you like to get passive income with residential property management? Spencer Sutton will tell us how, and he's the VP of marketing for Evernest and has helped scale the company from 8 team members to 800 plus in 50 plus cities. And he bought and sold over 150 homes in Birmingham, as well as managed 30 of his own properties. So, Spencer, tell us more about how can entrepreneurs get passive income with residential property management.
Property Wealth Strategies podcast with Lily Patrashko shares world's most influential property investors, sharing their strategies for making money with property.
Yeah, so great question. You know, a lot of people hear about building wealth through real estate, which is great, and they always think about passive income. And passive income is true. However, what people don't realize is that when they start accumulating properties, whether it's a single family residential or a small apartment complex, what they've actually bought is a business. They've actually bought a something that they're going to have to take care of. They're going to have to do a renovation on the property. They're more than likely going to have to go out there and find residents. They're going to have to screen residents. They're going to have to do all of the things that are required to put somebody in that house. And then not only that, they're going to have to take care of that person. So when they have an issue with the toilet that leaks or something like that, they're going to have to take care of that. And so there's a myriad of things that when people hear passive income and buying residential real estate, rental real estate, it sounds very good. However, it is a lot of work, and it's something I've got a lot of firsthand experience with because I was managing my own. But this is like probably the number one thing that I talk to investors about is, this is the way I like to look at it. If your time is equal to money, and if there are higher return things that you as an entrepreneur could be doing to grow, maybe even to grow your rental portfolio, maybe that's out finding properties, things that are higher return activities than actually managing the property, then you should be thinking or considering about hiring a property manager who could truly make that investment passive for you.
Thank you. Aside from hiring the property manager, which we'll cover in a second, tell me about what are the types of processes or things that can be put in place to make sure that the property manager has like an easy job. For example, like, I don't know, putting a code instead of a key to a door, or I don't know, certain things that you found, wow, those were like time savers for the property manager, but also for me as a landlord.
Sure. Yeah. I think some of the first things we did, obviously over the past 20, 30 years, it's come a long way from online marketing, right? So a lot of people can go online and read everything they want to about the rental property. Now, probably about 10 years ago, maybe 11 years ago, we started doing self-showing. So we started putting lock boxes on doors where residents could go, potential residents, applicants could go and look at the property themselves. All they had to have was an ID and a credit card, and they could get inside that house, walk around, look at it, and then they could go online and fill out an application. So I think there's definitely more streamlined ways now, and I think showing the property is one of the probably biggest time sucks for a landlord when they're trying to put a resident in there. If they have to go out there and show that property over and over and over again, if they don't live near the property, then it becomes a big hassle. So that's definitely one of the things that property managers and landlords are doing now to save a lot of time and friction with the leasing process.
Thank you. Tell me some other processes or things that you've put in place that have saved you and property managers that you have under your guidance that have helped you, you would say, save or make hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's going to be the biggest Like when you're a landlord or a property manager, some of the biggest things that you're dealing with, the biggest back and forth with an owner or resident is through the leasing process and then through any type of maintenance issue. So we have our own proprietary software that tracks all of our maintenance requests so that the maintenance requests come in, they're handled quickly. We have actually maintenance techs on staff that we send out to these properties, and they're building relationships with these residents so they know that, hey, this is an Evernest employee. They're coming out there, they get to know the issue, they know the house, and so they're able to repair those. Now, there are some tools out there that I would say even landlords can use to help streamline work orders. So work orders are any kind of repair issue that needs to take place. So they're not, the resident is not texting the owner, the landlord at their house at 2 a.m. There's online apps and different softwares that people can use to absolutely streamline that process. I think that's one of the big ones. We just happen to have built ours in-house because we manage around 20,000 doors across the country. And so we've had to streamline that. But I think just the normal landlord can do that as well.
Thank you. What are some tips, some property safety tips that a property manager or a landlord could put in place to make sure that their property is safe? What I'm talking about is First, imagine, a fire breaks out in the evening, or someone lost their key, or the gas is on and someone doesn't know how to turn it off, or the water is the water tap is leaking and there's like a massive flood all of a sudden. There's a lot of different issues that tend to happen either around Christmas, around Easter, around like critical moments where not so many technicians are available. And the other thing I found is, as a property manager myself, okay, is that, for example, I'm available 24/7. But I would say most agencies really don't care if the house burns down. As long as it's 5 o'clock, that's it. The time finished and you are on your own, dude. You know? So I'm wondering, is there anything you put in place to safeguard the property? And I'm talking not just in these kind of critical situations, but also, like you said earlier, about the self-showing. Let's say that I have a really expensive property and I'm giving it to you to manage and to rent out. I'm worried about someone leaving with the TV or the fridge, or, like some people go in and they will come with overalls and they'll take absolutely everything from the house. And the credit card of $3,000 will not be covering, tens of thousands of dollars that I may have in that house.
Yeah, I think, when I think about that, which is a great question, Lily, I think the self-showing thing, we have 10 years and probably we have shown 100,000 properties through self-showing and have had very, very few, minute number of instances where something was taken. And so I think that I understand the concern. What I would even think about probably that's more of a threat in today's market is more along scams. People taking photos that you have, let's say you're a landlord and you have a property and you take photos, you put them on Zillow, people can take those photos, they can put up a listing themselves, maybe on Facebook Marketplace or somewhere with a reduced amount of rent, so it looks really good to a resident, then they meet them over there and get them to sign a fake lease and give them keys and they take their deposit. So essentially they're stealing money and they're giving somebody a fake lease. So this is something we've seen happen in several markets. So I think some of the ways that you can safeguard that is you can definitely put some warnings on your listing. Be wary of online scams. You can watermark your images so people can't easily take your images and use them themselves. There's all kinds of things that you can do. If you wanted to be the only person that could enter the property and show the property, then that would obviously cut down on a lot of it, even though people could break in if they wanted to, especially if you're an out-of-state landlord, you're not living in the city where your property is, which that's a lot of people these days. So when I think about that, I think those are some issues that landlords need to be wary of, and so there are some ways that they can mitigate those risks. I also think when you're when you're thinking about the safety of a property, you should be thinking about the electrical system. Is my electrical system up to grade? Is it the proper voltage for the appliances and for all the things that I have in the property? So for instance, if you're a landlord and you have an older home, what we've seen in some of our markets are around the Midwest and the Southeast, some of these really old houses have tube and knob wiring, and they need to be upgraded. So make sure your home is safe from an electrical standpoint. You can also be thinking about what kind of plumbing we have in the property. Is it old cast iron pipes from the 30s and 20s because the house is almost 100 years old, or is it PEX and PVC pipe and those types of things? So those make the house a lot more livable. Definitely, you can offer security from an alarm system standpoint, video monitoring, ring systems, things like that, to make it a little bit less daunting for a resident when they're living there. They'll feel safer. But at the end of the day, you want to make sure that all of your systems are up to date, and that even things that most homeowners don't think about, like maybe you have a stairs down to a basement, but you don't have a rail on the stairs, you need to be thinking about those safety issues. That's a liability for you as a landlord, and it's also a danger to the potential resident who's living there. I lost you. You're muted.
Regarding property safety tips that property managers or landlords can put in place, where is it okay to have video monitoring? Is it okay to have video monitoring inside the house, or would you say no, not at all? I mean, I don't have that, because I'm not sure even if it's allowed. Are there any areas in the house where, like communal areas, where it is allowed? And I'm not aware of that. Like, and also in terms of the property safety tips, are there any things that property managers can put in place? For example, like a booklet regarding, like if the light switches off, what to do in this case, or all the possible different scenarios that could happen that a tenant could encounter. For example, let's say if there was some sort of flooding, where to turn off the water knob or something, or what are the kind of things that they could put in place to make sure that in case something does happen, the tenants know how to deal with it?
Yeah, I believe those are great ideas. We used to have the Evernest 10 Commandments, and they were always presented at the back of the lease. It was the last page of the lease, and it would say, when this happens, do this. When this happens, do this. And it would also have commandments like don't throw loud parties or things like that. Just kind of like, hey, these may be common sense, but common sense is not always common practice when it comes to landlords and residents. And so I think those are some easy things that people can do. We have not put video monitoring at our houses, but I do know that landlords probably do that. Usually they'll keep it to the outside of the property just so they can make sure that no damage is done. Nothing's happening outside. If somebody accused of someone of getting injured on the property, they'll have documentation of that. They don't do anything inside. I think that's more of an invasion of privacy, and no resident really wants that. And I don't blame them for that, but definitely cameras outside. And then we have 24/7, availability for our residents. So a resident can call 24/7 and speak with somebody. If they have an issue, there's like an emergency line that they can get things taken care of. When a resident calls in an issue, let's just say that the dryer is stopped working. They have some appliances, they have a dryer, and it stopped working, and they're like, hey, I need you to come out and repair the dryer. We have a list that our technicians or the people who are answering the phone walk them through that could save them from having somebody have to go out to the house. It definitely saves the landlord money if we can solve the issue over the phone and we don't have to send somebody out there. And so things like flipping the, have you checked the breaker? Has the breaker been set off? So you need to go and reset the breaker. That could be a very, very easy fix. And so we want to help the resident as much as possible with some easy, kind of common sense type fixes that they may not know about, which we're happy to help with. But then again, if it is really an emergency, we have 24/7 availability that they can reach out to us.
Thank you. What else would you like entrepreneurs to know about getting passive income with residential property management?
Yeah, I just think that the biggest misconception is you buy a rental house or two rental houses or three rental houses and it's set it and forget it. And it's not that at all. It is, again, you've bought a business. And so your mindset needs to shift. You are now a business owner, an entrepreneur that has a lot of work to do. And the name of the game for the only way that rental properties from a passive income standpoint actually earn you passive income, earn you money, is if you can keep a resident in that property long term and you can outsource the communication and the execution of the property management. And so, again, finding a property manager that's going to put a great tenant in, put a great resident in, and keep them there long term, this is how real estate investors can earn passive income and grow their wealth, grow their portfolio. But if they decide to do it themselves, which a lot of people do, which is perfectly fine. A lot of people like to have their hands have their hands on the property and know everything that's going on, which is perfectly fine. But passive income is built when you outsource the day-to-day operations and communication and the execution of the property management.
Thank you. Now, I live in the UK, and mm-hmm. for a really long time before Brexit, I found that there were so many great handymen and cleaners and all the different people that you needed to do, you know, like a really good property management, profitable property management business. And what mm-hmm. I found is that post Brexit, it was a lot harder to get this. Now, because I'm interviewing a lot of people from the US and I got to know the US market more, now I'm getting the impression that getting, for example, cheap cleaners in the US seems almost impossible. And I'm wondering, like, what is the strategy to get basically to still have a very profitable property management business, or a business where you buy properties and then you get them rented out and you manage to kind of get the process of cleaning these homes, whether it's on a long-term or a short-term basis, mm-hmm. and you don't let, you know, the cleaning fees ruin your profit margin. Are there any tips you have there?
Yeah, I think that, you know, when you're thinking about short term, there's a lot of cleaning involved, and it's really a hospitality business, right? It's less of it's not the long term thing. It's more of a hospitality business. So you have to have these people cleaning out these properties. I have found that there's usually always someone in a market who's starting their business, who needs to, like, who wants to build a client base. And so if you can find those people, we get people who reach out to us all the time and say, hey, I'm so-and-so with cleaning service, ABC cleaning service, and we're new to the area and we would love to, you know, be a vendor for your rental properties. And so we're big enough so that people are coming to us. But I think when you're a smaller operator, maybe you own one or two or three short-term, midterm, long-term rentals, then you're going to have to actually go out and find the people who probably are just starting and paint the vision for them of where you're going if you're going to grow your portfolio, so that they can see that there's a future ahead if you're going to, you know, hey, we've got one rental today, but over the next 12 months, we're going to have three or four or five. And so you're going to have more and more business. Plus, I'll introduce you, refer you to friends that I have that also own rental property that you can clean for them. So I think that would be probably the best way to do that.
Thank you. The other thing I've seen is that post-Brexit, it's so hard to find someone who speaks English and does a really good job and understands what they're supposed to do. And I'm wondering, how do you find these people, like not just people that are starting out and they're relatively cost-effective, but really good people who actually have common sense and so on? Because, you know, cleaning is the kind of job where you can make a lot of money if you're really good and you have, you know, can do a really good job. But a lot of times you have to pay this money anyway, because even if they don't speak English and even if they don't do such an amazing job, if there's nobody else that can do the job, like you might have to just like take these people for a while until you do find someone. So is there anything in particular that you do to attract really great cleaners, really great handymen, really great property managers that do an awesome job?
You know, I don't think there's, you know, at our size, the reputation, I think, helps, because they know that if they're able to clean one or two of our properties, we've likely got several hundred in that market in that same city that they would be able to clean. And so it's hard to, like, it's really difficult to screen for work ethic. It's very difficult to screen for excellence. And a lot of times you just have to essentially give people a shot and try. And I know that's pretty risky, especially if you're in short term and people have, you know, there's quick turnaround times, then people will complain. They'll leave you a bad review if they, you know, if they come into the property is poorly done. But, you know, we have gone through our fair share of cleaners. Obviously, we have gone through a bunch of them over the past 15 years we've been in business. And so it's something that we're, you know, finding good people. And honestly, Lily, doesn't matter if it's a property manager or if it's a cleaner or a maintenance technician, finding great people who execute at a high level is extremely difficult because there are so few of them that do it well.
Thank you. What are some great automations that you've implemented in your residential property management business to speed up the process and to make more money? For example, I tried using, you know, padlocks for keys, and I am key safes, actually, they're called key safes. But what I noticed was that the tenants, for example, were forgetting to close them properly, or some people were breaking into them. And I found no reliable way of making sure that a tenant can actually go in without me. Apart from, you know, I'm considering having like a code, you know, like a code kind of type of lock the door. But are there any other automations that you found quite effective in automating?
Yeah, for us, we do have processes for every single thing that we do. We have processes. Now, that doesn't mean they're automated. It could be that somebody pushes a button to make the process go. However, I would say probably the biggest thing for us is if we have a property on the market, for every one property that we have, we may have 100 people, 200 people reach out to us about that property. Now, as you can imagine, that is a lot of communication that has to happen. And so what we're working on is we're working on automation that would help answer all those questions through AI and through automatically, so that we're not having to use manpower to answer all those questions all the time, which we have been doing for a number of years. But we can streamline and make us a lot more efficient and then our people who are used to answering those questions can go on and do higher return things, which would be actually getting the lease signed. So the questions that are asked about a house are usually the very same questions that are asked all the time. It's usually the same questions. And if we have a repository of answers for that property, and it's pulled from a listing, then AI ought to be able to take that and answer, regurgitate the answer, give them the right information. And then when it comes down to the specifics of a lease, or the specifics of, like, I'm ready to apply for the property or sign a lease, then that's when our people step in and can really have that human connection, which obviously helps what we think close the deal.
Thank you. Are there any other automations that are in the property itself, like a code instead of a key, or any other like physical things that you've implemented?
Yeah, all of our houses are a little bit different based on what the owner. So some owners have different automations in the house. They'll have smart homes. They'll have like everything is connected to an app for their lights and everything for the resident. But most of it is because they're all, it's called scattered site single family. So these sites, it's not like in one building, they're scattered throughout the city. And it's a little bit more difficult to have automations in everything because we have so many different owners. We have like 9,000 clients and we have, I don't know, 100,000 residents. And so it's very difficult to say, hey, this automation is for everybody or can be in every single house. And so they're more, it's more a la carte automations, like you mentioned the keypad. So we do have homes that have the keypad door lock. And that way, when a resident moves out, we don't have to change the whole key lock. We don't have to come in there with a new key system. We can just change the code so that the new resident has the new code and the old resident doesn't. So you see that on Airbnbs all the time. But that would be one thing that's in properties. But a lot of them are very different because we have so many different owners. You're muted.
For the keypad type lock, have you noticed any safety issue or any like entry barrier? So for example, like have you ever noticed like tenants being unable to enter because they couldn't, let's say they entered the code and they couldn't get in, and could that create like some hassle for you? Or did you find that?
Yeah.
Actually, no. That was no problem.
Yeah, no. They could. It 100% could. So the biggest challenge with the keypad locks is just the batteries running out inside the keypads. And so they try to warn you ahead of time and kind of give you some flashing lights. But residents a lot of times don't really pay attention to that. So the battery going out and the door being dead is a big hassle, because then we need to send somebody out and change the battery. So so that's should be on everybody's checklist when you're walking the property, getting ready for a new person to come into that property. You should make sure that the batteries are good. That should mitigate any kind of hassle, but it definitely happens from time to time.
Thank you. Tell us where entrepreneurs can connect with you.
Yeah, sure. We have a website, evernest.co.co, and that's the best place. You can reach out to us. We have also have a YouTube channel, and we have a podcast where we talk to real estate investors from around the country, and that is called the Evernest Real Estate Investor Podcast.
Follow me for more property wealth strategies.